My name is Austin Chrysler. I want to welcome you to the Sharing Public Health Innovations computer demonstrations. We have, during this session, we're going to demonstrate two innovations in public health. The first demonstration leads participants through the process when a patient presents to a clinic with symptoms to how a public health alert is matched to the patient's systems and presented with the patient's EMR at the point of care. The second demonstration will exhibit a computer management system developed by a local health department, which includes an open source computerized scheduling system, client demographics and billing, and forms-driven electronic medical records. So first up is Ninad Mishra, Decision Support Program Lead, Division of Informatics Practice, Policy and Coordination, Centers for Disease Control, and Andrew Hamilton, Chief Operating Officer and Director of Clinical Informatics, Alliance of Chicago Community and Health Services, Chicago, Illinois, and they're going to be talking to us about DIPPC electronic medical records alerting computer demonstration.
How does this go like that? Good morning. My job is very simple. It's just to get out of the way and let the computer demo happen. I'll be introducing the pilot and the main speaker, Andrew Hamilton. And since he has already been introduced, it gets simpler. So EMR Alerting Pilot is a collaborative project between Alliance of Chicago Community Health Services, GE Health, CDC, and Chicago Public Health Department. And we have all come together to try to solve a problem. And the problem is how we can, the solution to that problem is based on working with EMR systems. So the main challenge that we have come up against is how can providers be alerted of outbreaks relevant to their patient care, to their patients at the point of care. And I want to put emphasis at the phrase, on the phrase point of care, because till now, most of the alerting messaging that has been done asynchronous to the clinical workflow. So a physician might get an alert or a message in the morning, and he might be seeing patient in the evenings. How do we make sure that our messages are synchronized with the clinical workflow?
Can I interrupt?
Sure.
I've just gotten word from virtual attendees that there's no audio getting into the. They're not hearing you at all. They're just seeing an image.
Sorry.
Put this one over.
Adam, it's muted. Ah. Check 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello?
What is that? Is that coming through here?
That almost sounds like it.
Okay.
Can I get this one?
Yeah.
That was fun. That was
I'll just proceed.
Maybe they have audio coming through here somehow. It's muted. Is there somebody who has a laptop? Everybody should be muted.
Can you mute them?
Yes.
I this is not my software. I have no idea how to.
Okay. Live presenter, but you know what? Actually,
yes. Yeah. Was
come on,
input coming from that. As long as you guys aren't playing any audio through these computers.
I'm not, how are you?
You're gone.
God.
So do I have to go back to the whole thing or should I start where I started? Okay. So since this project has been branded as a clinical decision support project, I thought I would introduce one slide from CMS about how CMS defines a clinical decision support system. So according to them, any HIT functionality that provides general and person-specific information intelligently filtered and organized at appropriate times to enhance health and healthcare qualifies as a clinical decision support system. And for meaningful use stage one, the criteria for decision support is that it should use patient-specific information to offer diagnostic or treatment options, meaning that if you have a general recommendation like, you know, vaccinate everybody above 65, that might not qualify as a decision support application. But if you have patient-specific information that you then use to offer diagnostic and treatment options, or diagnostic or treatment options, then that might qualify as a decision support application. And it must be conditional, that is, the rule will produce a different action or different information based on the patient-specific information. So as long as any application, HIT application, fulfills these two requirements, it would qualify for decision support meaningful stage one. So without further ado, I would like to introduce Andrew Hamilton, and he would walk you through a computer demo of the pilot.
All right. Thanks so much, everyone. It's really great to be here, even though my flight was a little delayed last night. So I just thought it might be helpful to set the context of the organization that is piloting this particular application. So the Alliance of Chicago is what's known as a federally funded health center controlled network. These are organizations that are set up to bring community health centers together to do various projects, and one of them, in this case, involves the centralized deployment and maintenance of an electronic health record system. So we, as an organization, are supporting 32 federally funded health centers in 10 states across the United States. And that represents just over 500 practicing clinicians at any given time and approximately 230 or so physical service delivery sites throughout those 10 states that we're in. This particular pilot is happening at one of those particular community health centers I'll describe in a moment. The purpose really of a health center network is to, in recognition of the fact that health information technologies and advanced electronic health record systems in particular are challenging and complex applications to manage, and these safety net clinics who are caring for predominantly uninsured or underinsured individuals don't typically have the capital, human resources, and technical capacity to house an advanced system. So that's really what we do, is provide that on behalf of those health centers in a way that makes it meaningful. So we piloted this particular application at an organization called Near North Health Service Corporation. It is one of Chicago's longest-standing federally qualified health centers. It's been in existence for approximately 50-some years as a clinic, and started in the Cabrini Green neighborhood of the city of Chicago, for those that are familiar. We are working across all of their 7 sites, so there are about 35 FTE providers that are impacted. Those providers look and feel like any safety net clinic: nurse practitioners, physician assistants, physicians, et cetera. And in this case, because the public health alert project we're working on is around foodborne illness, we've targeted the deployment specifically at family practice internal medicine folks, so the folks that would likely encounter patients that might perhaps be presenting with symptoms that would perhaps indicate a foodborne illness. So with that being said, we started initially with looking at the current workflow. So one of the challenges in a public health system interacting with any clinic and safety net clinics included is that oftentimes the public health infrastructure is aware of a prevalence of conditions and or certain local concerns that may or may not have filtered down to that frontline caregiver. And so the purpose of this project really was to bring that information in as quick and most expeditious way as possible from the public health agency, in this case the City of Chicago Department of Health, to that local caregiver, so that as they're providing routine care on a day-to-day basis, that they are interacting with an intelligent system that is giving information back to them relevant to particular alerts or conditions in their geography. So it's important when we think about decision support in any realm that we understand what the workflow looks like before we implement the project, develop the content, as it were, in this particular project to meet that workflow, and then redesign any aspects, which for us really meant just training. We didn't really change the basic workflow of the office visit. We were able to introduce the decision support without having to do that. So therefore, really, it was just a matter of training clinicians about what they would expect to see and where they would expect to see these particular alerts. So in graphical format, this looks something like, in this particular scenario, oftentimes a medical assistant or an RN would room the patient and would take their vital signs chief complaint and then route that patient and the document to the provider. And through the course of that provider visit, the provider would document review of systems and physical exam characteristics for that particular visit. And in that moment, we have gathered all of the essential information necessary for the rules engine that's housed by the CDC to give feedback whether or not that particular patient at that particular moment with those particular symptoms actually does demonstrate the potential for being at risk for a local or specific public health alert in that geography. So that's what our intent was of the pilot. And then, of course, in the event that that alert did fire for that patient, the clinician has the ability to access more detailed information, particularly giving guidance around additional diagnostic testing or further treatment that might be warranted given the particular circumstance of that patient's visit. So I'm going to pause there and see if what I just said made any sense at all. Landed at 1 a.m. last night. Woke up at 6 to go for a run before coming here, so that makes sense. Yeah. So I had some screenshots, but I'd like to show it here if I could, but I'm not exactly sure how one would give me the power to do that. Okay. I'm on the live meeting.
Okay, so what we're going to have to do is transfer. Make you the presenter, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah,
sure, absolutely.
What EHR would your clinicians be using?
Uh-huh. Yep, so I'll show you. In this case, this project was done in partnership with GE Healthcare, so we're using GE Centricity Practice Solution, which is the combined practice management EMR software.
Is it open source?
Right now it says you're presenting. Interesting.
So, with GE Healthcare, what we're using is a standards-based implementation. The integration with our product is not open source. It is something that we're piloting.
Oh, no,
but
that.
The specifications are freely available. We're actually using the HITSB.
Okay, well, you're listed as a presenter, so you should be able to share. So go to content.
And integrating the healthcare enterprise has also codified that a little bit further in the quality public healthcare research domain in a transaction they have to our PH29. That's where standards degree. But all the specifications
go to
are
share.
Actually
right
based
there.
On the HL7
sure
info button specification, the URL implementation guide, is all sort of very simple web-based transactions and services that we're using to actually integrate with. What can be on the back end,
from the
implementation, a very complex set of decision support.
Great. Any other questions for now? So, as mentioned, this is the pilot, the GE Centricity Practice Solution. So I've logged in already, and I'm in the particular patient's chart. So a couple of things just relevant to this particular pilot. So the provider location of care, meaning where the person logged in has seen the patient in the database, has a zip code attached to that individual, because I'm nurse practitioner Andrew Hamilton, which is true, I am, but I don't see adults. You can see I've logged in because that's what it says here at this fake or fictitious health system. And because the system does record that, it knows what zip code I'm in, so it's pulling that information. In addition to that, Don, the patient himself, has obviously been registered in the database as somebody who we're seeing. So his demographic information, his zip code and address, et cetera, are also recorded. So the technology that's running in the background, which the folks from GE could definitely provide much more detail on, it's going to pull from that place, in addition to the actual visit. So I've started a visit to demonstrate how this works. So we have, in our workflow, again, the typical thing that you would see, vital signs are being entered, et cetera. And so each of these data elements for other scenarios would obviously be able to be used based on what the need is. We have an intake screen here. You can see we're meaningful use ready, so we're collecting smoking and depression and all sorts of things. But the medical assistants and nurses in our setting typically take that initial chief complaint, that initial presentation of the patient. They might add additional data and then go through med reconciliation activities, the standard things that they do. And then the clinician would move on to their part of the visit, and you'll see here I've stripped out all of the other parts of the visit that aren't relevant. So we're going to document here. My computer's ahead of that one, so let's see if it catches up in a second. There'll be a review of systems form, and in that template you can see that there's various ways to enter data. So in this case, we have expanded some of the detailed characteristics of gastrointestinal complaints that we hear in particular. So you can see I've documented a few of those. This is a standard form that we use in all of our visits. So we didn't build anything unique for this particular pilot project. And then finally, they would get to the physical exam. And we made the decision at this point is where we wanted to present the particular decision support alert to the clinician. And I can't underestimate how important it is as we think about how we can interact with those frontline caregivers. Where that alert is positioned actually has very significant meaning to the clinician user. For example, if I am alerted in this case to a multi-state outbreak of salmonella, et cetera, if I wanted to read more detail about that, I could click View Alert, and it would give me more information. Now, in this case, it's pulling that information from the CDC website, and it's going to tell us more defining information about what has already been, what we know about that particular public health alert, details about that alert, as well as even provide guidance to the clinician if they are unfamiliar with that particular clinical condition. And I think that also is very important. So we chose to place it in the physical exam because we believe that in many cases the alert would inquire or request the clinician to perhaps do more detailed examination. So it didn't make sense to place the alert in the orders module, because we think it's going to drive a particular behavior. So this alert is dynamic and will change, obviously, with the information that we're entering for that patient. In the event that there is not a public health alert, that box would simply not display information, or it would say that there are no alerts for this particular patient at that time. Then from there, the clinician would be able to continue with their visit, document what's necessary, add additional lab orders, et cetera, per that typical workflow. So I'm going to stop there and see if you want me to go back and review any of that, or if this makes sense to those in the room. And then,
I have a quick question for you. Can you tell them what's different on this form than the before and after?
So
where you had the alert.
Yeah, so The question is, what's different on this particular form now versus what was there prior to this project? So the only difference is the space from the purple bar at the top that says you're doing the physical exam to the first exam characteristic. We expanded that space to fit the context of the alert. And I guess in lay words, what we're saying is nothing really changed. And that actually is the beauty of this particular pilot, is that we're not having to be disruptive to an already in place clinician workflow.
Yeah, hi, I'm Mark Dente. I'm the Chief Medical Informatics Officer for General Electric. I'd like to add a couple of comments of the impact in the thought that was designed into the workflow scenarios that you're looking here. So first, we could have chose any alert, right? We could have chose any topic, and we specifically chose foodborne illness as an alert. So as somebody that has done 20 plus years of informatics work, to put in alerts inherently into the EMR, whether it's a GE system, a Cerner system, an Epic system, there's effort there. And it's one thing if you're Mayo Clinic or Intermountain Healthcare that has the capability and the staff to keep the systems really tweaked and at optimal performance. Totally different scenario of how we want to reach out to the average community where something such as a transient alert is a foodborne illness, because it's here today, might be here for 4, 5, 7, 9 days at most, and then gone, right? How do you manage that? So the real key here is one that the system didn't require any modification other than maybe extending out the form so we actually had the real estate to put the alert in. So there wasn't any modification of code. Second was the fact that the ability to have the CDC now manage the alert, the rule, and the content that supports that rule is really transformational, because now it says, hey, how can you maintain content external to the EMR? So this really, in essence, is a biosurveillance system. Happens to be used for foodborne alerting. But there are really critical factors that came together for this particular pilot. So we're very excited about this.
I would just add to that, it's not only the CDC rules engine, but it's also the opportunity for the local public health system to make that alert relevant to those providers in that jurisdiction. I am a pediatric nurse practitioner who provides HIV services to adolescents, and I can say that it can be complicated in your day-to-day practice. You're keeping up with all kinds of things, and you're getting inundated with information from everywhere. And this type of technology, I think, really does arm that frontline caregiver in a way that's very meaningful and quite powerful.
A couple of questions. What part of CDC did this app come from? And then how will you work with the State Health Department, EPI unit, and the local to link into this, and then how would it be linked eventually into disease reporting and tracking?
So what part of CDC is working on it? We are a division of informatics policy practice and coordination. We are in division of informatics policy practice and coordination. We do the decision support work, and we collaborate with different programmatic areas within CDC to carry out this work. And your second question was with regard to
how it linked to state and local health departments and to their existing disease reporting and tracking system.
Right. So we are working with Chicago Public Health Department, and they have had a very active presence in carrying out this pilot. In fact, they have given access to Chicago HAN network, and all the clinical alerts that they issue for their jurisdiction, we get to see that. And then we check back with them if they would like for us to introduce that alert into our alert repository. And then we can send that alert back to their local providers if the matching algorithm works that way. And so we have always been very mindful of that and the governance issue of alerts. And it is also important to keep in mind that it's a pilot project. We are assessing feasibility, seeing if the technology works. We are running into some issues with the network delays and latency. So it's not a live system as yet, but you can see the potential. So we are working on that aspect.
Oh, yeah, go ahead, sure.
It's a question and a comment, and I really like to see this application, how you interoperate with public agencies. So just yesterday we were presenting in a public health reporting session some relevant FDA kind of approach to the problem. And you mentioned about food safety, and you know that's an area. So we call this ASTER. The acronym is Adverse Event Spontaneous Triggering Response to this type of events that's coming directly from EHRs. So I can say that FDA will be also interested in this kind of approaches, and I'm glad to see this.
That's great. That's great to hear. I think one of the exciting things about that, the interest in sending information back, is that we spend a lot of time in our clinical settings today completing reporting forms, disease reporting forms, et cetera, which are still a manual process for many, many practices in the U.S. And I think, you know, being able to leverage the technology to expedite the sharing of information back will be really, really important work for us to do collaboratively. Was there a second question, or was that?
I may have missed it when you spoke. Who literally implements the rules? I understand that you get them through the CDC and there's some standard, but who goes underneath the hood and runs the queries to get the symptom fields, and what? How mm-hmm. how complicated and onerous is that?
So that truly is a great question. So in this particular setting, we're actually working with one of CDC's partners, Northrop Grumman, who implemented the alert repository, and they're actually housing that and hosting that on a web server. And it's that system which actually runs the rules. The rules are essentially keyword and natural language processing based. So they've built a system that's just simply operating off of keywords that are associated with the specific diseases, and their repository has associated, for example, with the salmonella infection, a set of keywords that have been implemented. Now, this has actually been demonstrated several times with multiple organizations that the Centers for Disease Control work with. A couple years ago, we did it with Johns Hopkins with a different system, again, using more NLP, but also with coded data. And those rules can be as complex or as simple as the system that you're connecting to at the back end wants to make them, depending on how that works. So it's really so how difficult is it to connect up? This started 4 years ago here. Okay, now. That's not how difficult it is. I'm gonna finish the story here. Where CDC said, how can we get active alerts into the EMRs? I prototyped it the day after the presentation. Now, the timelines have been due to, you know, we've been doing demonstrations, and then we had to coordinate a pilot, and then there was reorganizations in various places, and then we had to find a pilot site. But it literally took me about an hour to put together a prototype system that would show how I could integrate this with the EHR. I've seen in IHE showcases numerous vendors who literally did this on the floor of the Connectathon, literally just wrote the code right there, integrated it into their systems. It's literally that simple. And it can be integrated with, I mean, so from my perspective, you know, I work for GE Healthcare, but I'm also about getting this out to other EHRs so that we can all take advantage of it. And I've seen this be integrated multiple times over and over again. Regenstrief integrated into one of their systems a couple of years ago, just sort of as a stretch goal, and it took them a day. It's very, very simple to do. And it's because it's based on simple, RESTful web services, basically almost like posting a form on the web. It's very simple to integrate.
So I'll give you the clinician answer. No, I'm just kidding. The one of the things that I think I understand, I unfortunately couldn't join the conference the last couple of days. I just was here recently, but the meaningful use program should be very meaningful to this audience, because the fact that this can work is predicated on a certain level of adoption of electronic health record system by a clinician in a practice setting. So, you know, one, that would be the answer from our end, is that there has been a lot of preparatory work to get clinicians to the level of system use that's required in order to have the data available for a project like this. And I don't want to underestimate that, because this is not sort of ready for prime time in every practice if they're just brand new to EMR. There is some front work there that needs to be done. That being said, I'll just close by saying that we've already talked about this. There were minimal changes, although there were obviously some fairly significant programming changes in the background that needed to be coordinated in this particular pilot, but obviously very technically feasible. So once we move from the pilot, our plan really is to expand and make this new alert content available beyond the initial smaller group that we selected, and actually do some pre-post analysis and time series analysis to see what actually is happening in the practice setting. So it's great that it's there, it's technically feasible, but now we really want to know, are we changing sort of the day-to-day life of a clinician in a meaningful way and actually impacting the care of the patients that we serve? So with that, I'll end. I thank everyone for your time and appreciate the opportunity to be here.